Hello and welcome to Who Are You? This is the Babylon 5 Watchcast, hosted by two former strangers, now friends, who have gotten to know each other while rewatching a favorite show from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Jafar.
And I'm Laura.
And we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episode 19, The Wheel of Fire. But before we get to that, we have one last set of alignments to discuss.
Yeah, the leftovers.
That's what I called it that in the notes, and then I teased it a couple episodes back. We have Bester, Corwin, and Lise.
Yeah.
And we're either going to agree immediately on all three or not at all. And I'm really interested on where we land. I think Bester might be the most contentious or the most instantly agreeable. And yeah. I don't think there's a lot of middle ground. Why don't we start with Corwin? Because I feel like this is an interesting conversation to have.
This is really an interesting conversation because I went first in my head immediately to neutral good.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, well, is he more lawful neutral? Like, he's neutral something, right?
I have that exact same neutral good. Wait, maybe he's lawful neutral written in my notes.
Okay, let's talk ourselves into one of them. What are your ideas?
So things that make me lean neutral good are when Babylon 5 breaks off from Earth Force, he sticks around.
Yes, that's a good point.
Things that make me lean lawful neutral, his boss told him that he was sticking around. And he wasn't going to argue with Ivanova because Ivanova is God and God's word is law. So, I could see it going either way. I don't think we get a whole ton with the character to really, like, there's no Corwin episode, really. I think the most we get is that time he accidentally starts hitting on Ivanova.
Right. He thinks that she's hitting on him, and so he's responding to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that episode actually is what makes me lean toward neutral good.
Yeah, same.
Because, you know, he could do the rulesy thing of like, can't fraternize with my boss, but he thinks he's interpreting signals that she's interested in him, and he's like, well, okay, maybe I'll bring some roses. I don't know. So he's not so rulesy that he's like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, he did stick around when we broke away. He didn't like stick to his rules that hard that he had to go back to Earth.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it is neutral good.
Yeah. I think we've talked ourselves into neutral good here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go with it.
Lise. We love Lise.
This is a pro-Lise podcast. As I'm sure we're going to see later in the episode.
Honestly, I feel that this is probably the best Lise we get. I don't remember if there's anything else in the last couple episodes, but anyways.
There must be, yeah. It's hard to put something like alignment on a character that's clearly not developed at all. So in my mind, I'm just like, true neutral. Lise is whatever you need her to be at the time. Like,
yeah. No, I have the same thing. I have true neutral. I think Lise is very motivated by, besides the needs of the plot, is mostly self-interested. Like, she cares for people. But if you're not one of her people, she doesn't really give a shit.
Right. Yeah.
So that tends to be very true neutral behavior. True neutral is not necessarily selfish, but when you are only motivated by self-interest and maybe the interest of a few other chosen one, very close people to you, then you're probably lawful neutral.
Okay.
Or true neutral, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Bester.
Okay. Well, it's tough.
I feel like I've got a hot take here.
Okay, I want to hear your hot take. Do that first.
Chaotic neutral.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a hot take or not, because as far as I know, this is something that no other part of the Babylon 5 community cares or discusses.
Yeah.
So I feel like the easy answer is chaotic evil.
Yeah.
I don't think
chaotic evil's quite right.
Bookbester might be chaotic evil. It depends. I think he kind of teeters. He definitely does some things that are in the evil category.
Right.
But he does do some things that are in the good category. And he is mostly driven by the interest of the telepath species.
Right. That's the thing, is for evil, which I feel like the show wants me to think of him and align him as evil at first, maybe not once you get into the lore and you get farther into the show. You really have to be, to me, putting yourself above all things. And he's not putting himself above all things. He is thinking about the group that he is in, which is the telepaths. Yeah. Doesn't care about mundanes. We know that. But he cares a lot about his species, if you will. So I don't think you can just throw him in the evil bucket. I thought about that. I thought about neutral evil because, you know, he cares about Psycor's rules and laws. He does not care about mundane laws. So no. He can't be lawful anything, in my opinion. But he is a little too chaotic to me for that neutral evil bucket. So I think I'm going to have to agree with your chaotic neutral.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I'm with that.
Did you have something else written down or have you convinced yourself via my... I feel like
No. You
did most of the justification for chaotic neutral. Was that your original?
Yeah, that was my original thought. Oh. Was, well, maybe he's maybe he's neutral evil, but I didn't like it. It didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
And you said chaotic neutral, and it's like, okay, yes, I get that, because he is out for the group. He is not out for Bester.
Yeah.
He's riding or dying for those telepaths.
It's true. Well, that's the last of our alignments. We're drawn to the close of a lot of these cold opens we've been relying on for 5 seasons of TV. I mean, we'll do alignments again for Crusade for sure, and probably for Battlestar when we move over to that, to be perfectly honest.
Were we going to be able to do plot poker for Crusade? Were we getting Crusade cards or... I don't know. Is that a thing? Was that a thing?
It is a thing. They're like $300 a box, though.
No.
And I mean, real talk. I don't think I've talked about it on pod. Maybe I've mentioned it, but I've gotten real heavy into the new Star Wars Unlimited card game.
Fun.
Which came out a couple weeks ago. And that's my card budget these days.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have $300 to drop on questionable cards.
No. No, I'd rather buy 2 Darth Vaders with that money.
Sure. Yeah.
Ugh, active card prices are significantly different than I remember them being back in my old Magic days. But I got out of Magic before card prices got crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping we'll find some other bits for Crusade.
I'm sure we will. You know, if anyone has a good idea, shoot it over in the Discord so that we can just blatantly steal it.
We'll credit you.
We'll say thank you for sure.
Mm-hmm. For sure. We're real good at thank yous.
Well, you know who else is good at thank yous? I think Lockley has a couple clutch moments in this episode, and
is due
a few thank yous by a few people, and we'll talk about that as we discuss season 5, episode 19, The Wheel of Fire.
Yeah, we open with Jakar's shuttle coming into the terminal.
Mm-hmm.
And a hazmat team being summoned to Cargo Bay 7. Jafar, I want to pose to you. What happened, her?
So, Narn vomit is famously toxic.
This is exactly what Aaron said.
I'm going to say he got a little sick on the flight.
I like it. Yeah, because he's definitely not at Space TSA when he walks up and has this conversation with Lockley. No, I mean, he's not out in Space TSA yet. Like,
he's in customs.
In the terminal. Yeah.
But it's important that he's coming through Space TSA here. and through customs, because what did happen here? Because he was on Centauri Prime with Sheridan and Delenn, who had a White Star ride home. Did they make Jakar fly coach instead of bringing him on the White Star? Those rude motherfuckers.
Wow. That is really rude.
Can you imagine? Oh, Jakar, by the way, you're going to have to find a flight home because the White Star, which is larger than the fucking Enterprise, like these are huge ships, right?
Uh-huh.
I know we don't get a good view of it in space and stuff. It's hard to, there's no bananas for scale, but fucking, they're large ships. And it's just like, sorry, Jakar. You're going to have to book a flight from this isolationist empire that your people were just bombing for the last 3 hours.
That you don't particularly like.
Right? And just find a way home.
Uh-huh. Get on, you know, the Spirit Airlines flight out.
Yeah.
Because that's all that's left. All the good airports got bombed. Yeah.
The real answer, of course, is that he went on one of the Narn cruisers that was in space and hung out with some people because he knows everyone in Narn.
Okay.
But that's stupid, and it's much more fun to think of him having to book the flight because Sheridan and Delenn are assholes.
Yeah, so Captain Lockley comes and greets him before he gets, like, out of the terminal at Space TSA.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wants to be here. Yeah. She just wants to see his face.
Yeah. Have you done this? Have you done something like this to someone where you know something's going to happen and you just want to see their reaction?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I know love you this have. Play. Oh, yeah. I love this play. 100%. I am this person. I know someone's about to be surprised. I make sure I've got a good seat and a bucket of popcorn.
Mm-hmm. That's the way to be. Yeah. So he's got even more followers. Now we have statues.
Yeah.
We have statues and signs and icons, like little paintings. This is fun.
Yeah. This is real, like, the Beatles landing in New York for the Ed Sullivan Show vibe.
I want one of these statues.
Yeah.
These would be really cool.
We get a good view of these statues, and they are, like, very patinaed, which means that they've been around for a minute. Bronze usually, unless you, like, apply that kind of green patina to it, takes time to develop.
Yeah.
And I'm just, like, wondering when they made these statues of Jakar.
Well, maybe we just have, like, Narn body statues lying around, and then we just put somebody's face on them when it's important.
That checks. That makes sense. Okay.
This is cool. This is not what he wants, though. He's not very into this.
Look, you've got it all wrong. You don't need to follow me. You don't need to follow anybody.
No. After this, we get Garibaldi being a fuck up to Theme.
Yeah. His apartment's a real mess.
This goes so poorly for Garibaldi that I thought this might have been a, like, nightmare he was having, and it was going to be him waking up late for the meeting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting that it looks like when Franklin calls him, he's already in Sheridan's office.
Yeah.
Just, like, where the background. He just shows his ass to everyone present because Sheridan pulls the angry boss trick of, like, oh, well, you just got here and you're standing, so why don't you go ahead and talk?
Mm-hmm. Sheridan tries to really be an empathetic boss here and be all like, look, I know you've had a rough year. It's all like, bro, like, are we not going to acknowledge the trauma of being fucking brainwashed and being forced to do stuff against your will?
Mm-hmm. Or that, you know, he was fucking brainwashed. Could this be, like, a remnant? Could Bester be still fucking up his life? Like, could we, maybe we need Lita to come in here and just do a scan? Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things that go unacknowledged here, especially because Sheridan says, you've had a rough year. I tried to forgive, you know, when you were late to meetings, unprepared to meetings, other things. And it's like, maybe you should have delivered that feedback at the time, Sheridan.
Right. The worst boss in the world is the one who only tells you the reasons you're getting fired when you're getting fired.
Yeah.
100%. It should never be a surprise. You should always know something is going on and someone isn't happy, whether or not it's your fault. And when this kind of shit happens, it's always bullshit.
Yeah. I thought this was a stupid move, just like the stupid move of, you know, we need you to listen for 24 hours straight for 7 days a week to this for this call for help from the White Star. Like, you should have been giving him this feedback as it was happening.
Yeah,
like, but he should have known that he needed to do better.
Yeah, but he's not angry. He's just disappointed.
Oh, that's such bullshit. I mean, it's not a bullshit sentiment, but it's a little bit bullshit when it's also couched with, like, I saw you were failing, but I didn't tell you you needed to do better.
Right. Sheridan's also like, you're going to be so alone if I fire you, so I'm not firing you.
Like, yeah, but I'm just sending you away.
Yeah, he's just like, I feel like this is designed to try and make us forget about Lise.
Yeah.
Because Sheridan clearly has.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's been, what, together, quotes, with Lise for 6 months at this point? I forget where we're at in time.
I imagine we're in around August, September at this point. And they got married on New Year's Day because it was the last scene. That's how that stuff always works in the show.
And, like, she's been to the station once briefly, but hasn't been mentioned a whole lot. So maybe Sheridan could be forgiven for forgetting about Lise. I don't know. I'm still mad at Sheridan for other stuff in this scene, too, because I really resent that, you know, he does this thing where he dismisses everybody but Garibaldi and Delenn and goes and talks to Delenn in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, I was mad until I talked to Delenn, and she has this different way of seeing things. And I know that maybe the show is trying to, like, do that mystical Minbari thing about, like, oh, my wise mystical Minbari wife has talked me out of my human anger. But it also is, like, this sort of a trope that I see where
yeah,
the woman
sure.
is supposed to be the one who talks the man out of his anger, and the woman is supposed to regulate his emotions. Yeah. And I resent that a whole lot.
You fucking should. It's terrible. It's a terrible sentiment.
Yes. It's stupid, and men need to grow their own rational pair and stop just depending on the emotion of anger to get them through everything.
Someone
else to rein them in. Like, fuck that. Fuck you guys.
Right.
Sorry, that got a little hot.
No. You're 100% correct. Men would rather marry a mystical alien monk than go to therapy. Like,
yes, that's it. And I, you know, it's just the burden I've lived with for 38 years of, like, that trope in media and then in existence, like, people in my life living that sort of idea. And so it does start to grate on the nerves after a while.
Yeah.
So anyway, Sheridan's not mad now. He's just disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to suspend Garibaldi for indefinite.
Yeah. Until he gets his shit together.
He does say one, I'll give him credit for this one line that I do like, that your problem isn't between you and me, it's between you and you. And I do like that line. I think that's really a heart of a truth. And maybe JMS wrote that at somebody.
Quite possible. Yeah. I'd have to read Becoming Superman.
We will eventually.
It's sitting. Like, I mean, it's on display in my house because I got it autographed. But it is just hanging out. Anyways, Franklin goes to Jakar because he's the only one who answers a phone call.
This was a little tenuous, right? I was like, why did this need to be Franklin? It's because we have 4 episodes left and we need to see our main characters X number of minutes in these last 4 episodes. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, Franklin gets the call.
So the fucking Kari need to get with the times. It's called the group chat. Which led me on a little mental exercise that I'd like you to join me on, Laura.
Sure.
I thought about giving you advance warning on this, but I didn't. So sorry.
Oh boy.
What do you think some of the group chats that would exist in universe in Babylon 5 are?
Oh, there's definitely one for, like, the assistants, right? So Veer, Natoth, Lanier, they need to have their own group chat.
Yeah. I thought Veer and Lanier might have one called Pike Bros, because Lanier gets his Denbok and Veer gets Morden's head on a pike. So.
Yeah, I like that.
I think Zach and Garibaldi have one called #NotAllCops, not realizing that they are part of all cops.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like Corwin needs one. We need to give our buddy Corwin a group. Okay. Somebody unexpected. Who would Corwin hang out with? Maybe he's in the assistants group chat because he's Ivanova's assistant.
Ooh,
sort of.
Yeah, he gets the invite. That's a good call. I think Sinclair and Sheridan had one at the start of season two called Surprise You're the Mayor that Sinclair set up to help with the transition. And Sheridan didn't respond to anything until season three.
I think that the telepaths also need a group chat because they spend a lot of time talking with their human mouths anyway. So why not also group chat?
I think Londo started one with Garibaldi, added Lanier after their bro episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then added Marcus when he saw him in the casinos all the time. And it's just called Down Below. Maybe it's called Lurkers. But it's literally just Londo pushing memes.
Yeah.
But Lanier laugh reacts every single one, not because he understands them or finds them funny, but because he understands socially that's what he's supposed to do.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then Garibaldi, every once in a while, when there's a shitstorm, will ask where everyone is. And that's Marcus has said nothing. Marcus got added, saw every message, never responded, never emojied, never replied.
Yes, but Marcus definitely laughed at the memes, like out loud. He's looking at his phone, laughing out loud, but he didn't laugh react.
He does not laugh react on the, no, he does not emoji laugh react.
Agree. Yes.
Anyways, Franklin waxes poetic about our place in the puzzle that is the universe for a little bit here. Zach and Lockley hear about some telepath bombings, Psycor sites with Remember Byron. And all this money is it's fueling all this terrorism is coming through the station.
Uh-oh.
Wonder who that could be.
Oops. Yeah, Lita definitely has not become a forensic accountant because she has not hid this money well enough.
Nope. Lockley goes to check in on Garibaldi. And we get a whole bit about her and her father being alcoholics, having problems with addiction.
Mm-hmm.
She talks through her pain and his pain, despite Garibaldi's best efforts to be an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Running out of his room, doing stupid bullshit, just being a general ass, hiding in the elevator. And she's all like, we're still going to have this conversation, dude. Like, I don't know why you're fighting this.
Yeah, to run out of your own space instead of to throw her out, that's like desperation, right?
Right.
This does actually like solidify for me in Day of the Dead, where she meets Zoe again. There was something more there than just girlfriends. Like, they were together.
Yeah, yeah, they were roommates.
This person died.
Air quotes.
Roommates.
Man, someone on Spoo posting today had something that was like PJ's slumber party, right? And then right after was Ivanova and Talia in their PJs, right? And the number one comment, I just opened it up, there's one comment and it's all like, they were roommates with air quotes. And I'm like, I'm so glad that that has become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been making that joke for 20 years. Like it's not my joke, obviously.
Right.
But
right.
I'm glad that's still prevalent in the zeitgeist because it is just fucking hilarious to me.
Yeah. The 90s was full of roommates now that I revisit it on a more regular basis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lockley's baggage with her father is all very interesting because I don't think we've heard anything about that yet, huh? We knew he was in the military.
Yeah.
We didn't know about his alcoholism and that she has been down the same road. And clearly neither did Garibaldi. I did like her sentiment there at the end where she did a little self-reflection and said, maybe this is why we don't like each other because game recognized game. We can tell. And we're just too similar. We don't like each other.
I've known people like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a very real thing.
Yeah. Where it's just all like, Both in, I've had it happen where someone has had too similar of a personality to mine.
Uh-huh.
And then I've also had someone who like fills the same like friend role in the group.
Mm-hmm.
Like every group of friends has people who fill certain roles. There's the group mom, you know.
Of course, yeah.
You know, there's the problem child. I'm the person who knows people.
Uh-huh.
In almost all of my group of friends, I'm like, oh, hey, I need to know someone who does this thing for whatever reason. I am the person someone calls to get a recommendation on something usually.
Uh-huh.
Like mechanic or like, oh, hey, who's a good electric? Like in my adult life, I've become the White Pages or the Yellow Pages.
Uh-huh.
But in college, it was a little bit more nebulous.
I get you.
Not my thing, but I can put you in touch with someone.
Yeah, I'm smelling what you're stepping in. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, it's worse when you have one of your own that you're like, oh no, we're so much alike. And you live in my house and you're like tiny me and we'll never escape each other. And we're going to have to learn to coexist. But we still love each other, obviously.
Yeah.
DNA is great.
Yeah. She talks a bit too about the children of alcoholics fill one of two roles, and this hit me real hard in the feels.
Yeah.
Having my grandfather had joined AA and was sober my entire life. He died with a 45-50 year chip from AA.
Mm.
But his 20s, when he was, you know, like a dad to my mom, were a real problem, you know, to the point where my grandmother had to leave him with six kids.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that, and I immediately like saw my mother as the person who rushes to solve every problem for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And the comment just hit me so hard in the feels.
Yeah, that is hard. And it is interesting, especially for our generation, I think, being the ones who maybe had parents who were that child.
Mm-hmm.
And then we experienced a totally different person as a grandparent.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting experience.
Yeah. Anyways, Zach and Lockley and station security go to arrest Alita, and she takes over the minds of like 20 people.
Oh, this is so cool and creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where we're just all suddenly tapping.
Yeah, she starts doing I'm sure it's coincidence, but it's the four tap rhythm from The Master and Doctor Who. I don't know if Doctor Who was an allusion to this, but it's definitely the same pattern that the Master uses in David Tennant era Doctor Who as like a hidden thing in the background to know that someone's being controlled.
Oh.
And so it was very, it's like, it happened the first time and I'm all like, nah, it's a coincidence. And then it kept going for a bit and I'm just all like, maybe Doctor Who was alluding to this. Maybe they weren't. I don't know.
It'd be fun if one of them was alluding to either one, you know.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I love
Doctor
it.
Who's got enough history where that could have been used somewhere in Doctor Who somewhere else 40 years ago, and I wouldn't know.
Yeah, so. It's quite a backlog.
Yeah.
This gets real, real threatening as it continues, doesn't it? It's not just taps, then it slaps on the table,
mm-hmm.
and then it's only Lockley who is not being controlled. We see Zach just given the best derp face.
Yeah.
Like A+ Jeff Conway.
Mm-hmm. He's got this like little eye twitch that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
So good. Just like slack jaw. I'm not in here, you know.
Mm-hmm. 50-yard stare. Yeah.
And she tells Lockley point blank, I've been touched by the Vorlons. You don't know what I'm capable of anymore.
Mm-hmm. But someone does.
Someone else has been touched by a Vorlon and also knows the danger. Like touched by an angel?
Yeah. 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 Okay, touched by an angel. Right. That was a show. I never watched it, but yeah, it was a show.
Like once or twice. Yeah.
Yeah, Sheridan rolls in with a PPG to her head. Just
yeah.
Like,
oops.
So is he immune to telepathic control?
I mean, that's the implication, I think, because if I was Lita and I could, I would just like get him to point the gun right back at himself.
I read a whole thing on Midwinter about this specific moment being the reason why they were drugging the shit out of him when he was being interrogated back in season 4.
Oh.
Because they would have tried telepaths and couldn't. They just found it completely ineffective.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Is it also, could it be not just being touched by Kosh, but also being touched by Lorien?
Yeah. I mean, neither of them make sense because it's magic at this point, not science, but.
Sure, right.
You know.
But either seems possible in the world.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. She releases control. They put her in cuffs, and she's just kind of like, whatever, right? And then Lockley just fucking one punch takes her out.
Yeah.
I am still riding Team Justice for Lita, hashtag.
Yeah. Just,
hashtag Justice for Lita here. Because she's right. She's been shit on by everyone on this station.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Except Franklin, which she always forgets.
Franklin has actually gone out of his way to do a lot of things for Lita and the telepaths. Yeah.
And she does not handle this well at all. And it's not how I would recommend going about it. But she has done a lot for Earth, for the Interstellar Alliance, for the war effort, and just gets nothing here.
It does seem a little bit like they should be handling her a lot more diplomatically. Not just our command staff and Sheridan, but Earth as a whole. Like, Bester has got to have had a really solid impression that Lita is a totally different kind of danger now. And if so, then you would think Bester would have reported that to somebody.
I mean, maybe he's just planning on collecting her body.
Yeah. Or collecting her in some way. Like, maybe he can get it eventually. Sure.
After this, Garibaldi gets surprised by Lise.
Who's that girl?
Please. Yeah, Lockley gets an apology from Garibaldi, and she's got a present. It's the love of a good woman, which I also have issues with, but I can probably hold that in.
Yeah, that's a way to say this.
We're not here to fix you guys. Fix yourselves. Anyway.
It's your wife. You know, the person you've pledged to grow and change with for the rest of your life. So maybe you should grow and change with her, asshole.
Sure. It's Lise.
Sheridan, after this, is in his office and he can't understand what would turn Lita against him. Like, bro. Bro. Maybe, hear me out, it's you being shitty to her all the time.
Yeah.
Like, at any point, he could have been a solution to at least one of these problems. Every problem she's had, he could have offered a solution to at some point. And she has gone to him looking for one at times. And it has always been a no. And he's so dismissive. Like, it can't be that. It can't be all the stuff I did, because then I might be responsible. And that can't be the case. His post on Reddit's "Am I the Asshole?" did not go as he expected.
Yeah.
That's a Beth joke. Thank you.
Yeah. Sheridan. I mean.
Right.
Delenn also comes in and goes over the edge in this scene. She's like big mad for a Minbari.
Yeah, she comes in screaming and cursing and then just faints.
Oh no, something's up.
Lise and Alfredo talk. He refuses to let her help him. The hallmark of a happy relationship.
But he does come clean, which I think is positive for him, you know. Yeah. She kind of already knew because of her last trip to Babylon 5, but he admits the whole thing.
he eventually acquiesces into trying to accept her love, but only after she reminds him about the money.
And that she needs help running Edgar's Industries. Because
oh, her poor lady brain. Happy Women's History Month. it's fucking, ugh. Like, girl, Lise. Like, Lise, I'm talking to you. Look into the camera. Girl, I don't make it my business to get in other people's business, but you can do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is this really who you want to run Edgar's Industries with? Like, I don't know. Get yourself a good board is all I'm saying.
Right.
Get a good board of directors, lots of governance, then you guys will be okay. Build up a good C-suite. That's what we need.
Yeah.
Put not Jafar in charge of cybersecurity. And, you know, I'm always here. I'm a good accountant. But once again, Garibaldi has lived his truth, his best white guy cop truth, and failed completely upwards to the top.
Right. Is there a more thorough story of failing upwards in history, in all of fiction, than Michael Garibaldi? Name me a character that fails upwards harder than Michael Garibaldi, please.
True facts.
From drunk who couldn't get a job and had a friend do a favor because he felt he owed him, to Jeff Bezos. And head of the CIA in between. It's absurd.
Yeah. It's absurd.
Over in MedLab, Sheridan gets a dramatic zoom in with a musical sting on the Delenn is pregnant reveal that makes it feel like it's a murder cold open.
Could have been like a Maury thing, like who's the daddy, but we're all pretty sure.
Delenn is pregnant. Dun, dun, dun. Dramatic zoom in, big eyes. Just like his surprise is not entirely happy or welcome either here. Maybe it's just the previous scene coloring it. He does turn around after he gets a little bit of time to process, but it's just like, well, I mean, you told us that we couldn't get pregnant, so, you know, we weren't really taking the necessary precautions, doctor. Yeah. He's all like, I didn't say that shit. Don't put that on me.
Just because you didn't understand the medical words that I used. Oh, well.
Yeah. So Franklin is all like, is this something that you guys want? Like, that's an important question right now, because, you know, we don't know how this is going to go. This is, except not easy. That's the only definitive thing we can say, is this is probably going to be a terrible fucking pregnancy for Delenn, assuming that it's possible.
Yeah.
Because there's all this alien shit.
You're both kind of heads of a government, too. That's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. He does, is all like, look, Delenn's life more important, but if everyone can come out of this, let's be a family, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So.
Garibaldi goes to talk to Lita in her keyhole neckline straitjacket. So nice of Babylon 5 security to think about the boob window that you need in your straitjacket.
She was not arrested in this. She was not wearing this in the previous scene. This was a costume change during arrest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's for making it breathable. Like, a straitjacket can't be the most, like, breathable of garments. So we've just got this little vent for circulation. I don't know. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
So he offers her a deal, but wants to take her to a cell that's a little more private. But she just bust out the camera. Did we know that Lita's telekinetic as well? Had that been a reveal?
This is definitely, if it's telekinesis, because there's a whole how does telepathy work, brains run on electricity thing, that I could see this maybe not being telekinesis from a technical aspect of stuff they never bother to explain. And nor should you. I think if you're getting in the weeds about how telepathy works,
Yeah,
if it's not very pertinent to the plot, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Correct. Yeah.
Let it be space magic. It's cool. We're watching a space show. We understand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't think we've seen her do a ton of telepathy stuff. This seems like an upgrade.
Yeah, but we know that Talia got the telekinesis upgrade from Ironheart, but I don't know that we had seen any telekinesis yet from Leeta. So interesting. File that away.
Yeah. I mean, there's some stuff with the shadow ships where she like made them stop moving, but that could also be mind controlling the pilot.
Right. That's how I took it. Yeah.
But maybe that wasn't it. Maybe it was telekinesis. We don't know.
She is a nuclear bomb, as she has basically told everyone. Right.
Yeah. She is the WMD of telepaths.
Garibaldi wants the neural block gone, and he thinks Leeta is his ticket to it, since she is the Vorlon-touched nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
He thinks that he can get Edgar's Industries to buy off some politicians and go to bat for her. But she has a counteroffer that we don't see just yet.
Nope. But we cut over to Garibaldi going over the deal with Lockley. Jakar is kind of lurking in the background before he enters the conversation.
Yeah, in this open office that just anybody can overhear anything. Now, I got a little confused in this scene, Jafar.
Yeah.
Is this staged for Jakar's benefit?
I mean, like the character?
Well, like their conversation, like Garibaldi talking to Lockley, were they staging this for Jakar? Because it felt staged to me, but I was trying to figure out what on earth, how you would stage that.
I mean, the fact that it starts with like them going like, oh, well, you know, she's got all that Narn money for the telepath genes that they offered.
Uh-huh.
And he's just kind of like, oh, shit, push the thresholds, and just hides behind the corner. So... maybe. It depends on how much credit you want to give, I guess, Garibaldi. I don't think Lockley could stage it, not knowing what she's about to be told. So it had to be Garibaldi staging it. And maybe he did for Jakar. They're bros.
Yeah. It's possible. I don't know. This is where I was starting to like not follow what we're doing very well.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've got a bunch of Narn money. They can trace it back to her. Jakar busts in and says, well, how about I just take her away? And I'm tired of all these people following me around, wanting to hear about my thoughts and making me into a religion. So if I just run away to explore the universe with a telepath, that'll make things better, right?
Yeah. Just going to go fuck off and travel the galaxy.
Basically, I'm just going to walk the earth.
What you mean, walk the earth?
You know, like Kane in Kung Fu. Walk from place to place, meet people, get in adventures.
And maybe he can help her deal with her anger. That's his proposal. Is like, I've dealt with a lot of righteous anger at the Centauri, and I'm all zen about it now. Maybe I can fix this for Leeta, too.
Yeah. Okay. And it's totally not that the two of them have only had needlessly horny conversations on screen before this.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, probably not, yeah.
We learned the counterproposal that Garibaldi was offered is basically taking over fighting Psycor in the background and funding the cheap. I don't want to draw a line between terrorist and freedom fighter at the moment.
Yeah,
that seems a bit precarious in the current line. Atmosphere. I think freedom fighters are who wins and terrorists are who loses. Much more so than any other determining factor, historically speaking.
Yeah, he's got to do it through Edgar's Industries and probably behind Lisa's back, is my guess.
Yeah, just take your wife's money and fund a bunch of fundamentalist organizations. What's the worst that could happen?
I feel like this is setting up our next book club a little bit. You think so?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. We even get the time frame, the 2 years before Leeta returns.
Yep. Okay. So
we'll see when we pick up in the third book. I know that I read the first page and that it was a time jump until after the show. So yeah. That was one of the reasons why we postponed. Yep.
Yep. We cut to Sheridan and Delenn resting on their weird Minbari bed. He can't stop staring at her. And they wonder about Londo.
Yeah. And we get our second episode in a row with Emperor Mallari alone on the throne.
In the dark. So sad.
Yep. Well, Laura, on our patented scale of Babylon's 1 to 5, how did you feel about this episode?
I really have to peg this one as average. Is that bad? I feel like it's weird, but...
I liked this one.
Yeah? Okay. For me, this was just a 3. Like, we had a lot of things happening and a lot of weirdly motivated choices, I felt like.
Yeah.
Where I wasn't sure at the end if we were staging something for Jakar's benefit. I wasn't sure why the Kari was calling Franklin. Like, I was like,
that's
eh.
Fair. There's a lot of weird stuff in this one.
We're doing a lot of that stuff where we're trying to get all the pieces on the board in the right way to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
And it felt a little obvious for me. Oh, and then like Jakar being like, well, I'll take Leeta away. Like, okay.
Yeah. All the characters need to do something, so Leeta can come with me.
Yeah, yeah. And we're doing that thing where we split up the found family. They're all going to go to their own separate places and whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, but that's always kind of sad. And I don't know. Also, I just didn't understand a lot of the motivations for Lise and Garibaldi. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I put this at a 3.5.
Okay.
It is a lot of like very convenient timed set pieces to set mm-hmm. up the finale.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you know, 3 episodes before that. So when I see this happen in a finale in the first half hour, I'm still like, fucking come on. But happening
We're
this
still
far
a couple
in advance,
days away.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. You need to do something.
Now, there were really cool things in it that I will... acquiesce to, like the scene with Leeta controlling everybody's minds. Loved that. That was super
great.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well done. Lockley's whole monologue about her father.
Mm-hmm.
I found it really effective. So there was good stuff in it. There were just choices that I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think Lockley and Garibaldi's conversation in this episode is the high water mark of that storyline.
Yeah. Yeah. And it tied together some stuff for her that we hadn't really explored yet and kind of made it more real in addition to actually having an emotional impact with Garibaldi's story. So
it makes Day of the Dead a better episode because in that episode she alludes to both her problems with addiction and also how she is now the person who has to help everyone. And so when she references both of those things being the options, and she's been both.
Yep.
So's Garibaldi, to be fair.
Yeah, he has.
So
he has been both.
All right. Well, we got 3 episodes left.
I know. Tell me about the next one.
Season 5, episode 20, Objects in Motion. Lise and Michael learn they are the targets of an assassination because we need one more assassination attempt in the show. We can't close it out without at least one more.
A little bit more Lise, a little bit assassination. Yep. Perfect, right?
And Jakar prepares to leave. That's it.
Okay.
That's all we get.
Yeah, I don't really remember much about this, but assassination attempt I don't feel like bodes well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to that. We're racing to the end. So I guess if you have season 5 thoughts, hopefully you've got them in by now.
Yeah, it's probably... Well, wait, this episode airs not this week, but next week.
Mm-hmm.
We won't have finished the finale by then.
There might be some time. This
We're
is your
only
last
like two
warning.
Weeks ahead. Yeah, I think this is probably realistically your last warning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, all that said, it's time to say thank you.
Give us a real, like, Garibaldi apologizing to Lockley thank you.
Jeremy... Look, I know that sometimes I come across a little strong. I'm aware that's part of my personality. I know that sometimes I say things and just because of my tone or my cadence, they come off as sarcastic, whether or not I mean them that way. So when I say thank you to you, and if you ever felt it wasn't genuine, know that that's not the case. It has always been a true, genuine thank you for composing our lovely theme music. We appreciate it so much. We appreciate you so much, Jeremy. So thank you. And I'm sorry.
Can you see how red my face is from like holding in my laughter?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, like, no. It's
and I didn't hold it all in. It came out because that was very good. I loved it. And thank you to Angry Deck Time Machine on Instagram for sharing your talent with us through our podcast artwork.
Aaron, we really put you through the ringer on this one.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
We are at like an hour and 6 minutes of recorded time right now. And I'm sure this episode is under 50.
Yeah, there's got to be some chunks.
And there were no long breaks. There were no weird pauses. No one had a phone call. No one showed up at the door. None of that. So thank you so much, particularly on this episode.
Mm-hmm. Doing the real work.
We appreciate it.
And thank you to you, the listener, for being here with us and enjoying this ending to Babylon 5. Only 3 episodes left, but I hope you'll stay with us for Crusade. And then on into Battlestar Galactica. If you want to get any of those season 5 thoughts in, you can send them to whoareyoub5@gmail.com, or you can join us on the Discord and send us a message or share them with the whole group.
Yeah, all of our social media is shifting over to What Happened Here Productions, representing the whole podcast family. Us,
so exciting.
Last Time On, Post Apocalypse Now is around the corner, Babes with Batleths is around the corner. Possibly 2 other shows in the next 6 months right now.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, it's getting crazy over here, y'all. And we really appreciate you all being on the ride with us.
Uh-huh. And we'll see you next time.
On Last Time On. Ha! Gotcha, Ben.
Bye.
Bye.